I think during the announcements, I failed to mention we are going to have the sick program down in the lounge. We'll have our coffee hour out in the atrium area, but we hope many of you can join us in the lounge too. The other day, I read an item that told of a clergyman who had set a new record, one that was to be recognized in the Guinness Book of World Records. He now holds the record for preaching without notes longer than anyone else. He preached just over 28 hours. So impressed am I by so notable an achievement that I want all of you to make yourselves as comfortable as you can while I begin this historic minute to try for 29 hours. You'll be out of here for dinner tomorrow night for sure. Well, the other day I was cleaning out a huge accumulation of books and other items that have taken up residence in my office, and one of the books I came across was an old Guinness Book of World Records. Now, one cannot help wondering what drives the persons behind all of those meaningless records that make up the Guinness Book. Why, for example, was it important for one fellow to eat 63 bananas in 10 minutes? Or for another one to consume 130 prunes in 105 seconds? You fill in your own punchlines after those two. Or there was a woman who must have believed that her life would acquire new meaning if she broke the record for throwing a 2-pound rolling pin. Which she did. She hurled it more than 140 feet further than any of the many rolling pin throwers you may know. Another man distinguished himself by swallowing the record number of coins at one sitting. 424 of them. At least he wasn't afraid of change. I need a rim shot up here, I think. I have to think at least that some of this behavior is a result of it becoming more and more difficult in our increasingly crowded world for a person to feel personally significant, to acquire what is sometimes referred to as his 15 minutes of fame. A quick scanning of Guinness's book would seem to indicate that people are being driven to stranger, more absurd extremes in order to feel as if their lives make the least bit of difference. More sobering yet, it may be that going after a spot in Guinness's Book of Records actually is among the more harmless ways of people are trying to gain notoriety. For we hear, don't we, with growing frequency, news accounts in which obscure, unknown, ignored persons go after infamy with horrible, violent acts of murder and suicide. Too often the background stories of those tragedies turn out to be of a person who feels insignificant, unnoticed, not taken seriously by people around him or her. At some point came the thought, I will set myself apart. I will get your attention. You are going to know my name, even if it kills me. You can hate me, abhor me, renounce me, but you are not going to ignore me. Because in ignoring me, you rob me of my only way to feel important. Most of the time, thank God, the drive to feel important doesn't get that out of control. But there can be little doubt that it is a growing factor in our lives. It's not entirely new either. You'll remember that one of the temptations which Jesus wrestled with before he began his ministry was the temptation to acquire instant fame by jumping from the top of the Jerusalem temple to, in effect, get listed in the Guinness Book, or the Guinness Scroll of Records, I guess it would be. After all, wouldn't it be easier to get people to listen once you had grabbed their attention like that? Jesus quickly saw through the stupidity of that, but he must have later told his disciples that quick notoriety as a way to enhance his influence had been very tempting to him. The very temptation indicates serious confusion and misunderstanding. It's the idea and the hope that human greatness and notoriety go naturally together. Moreover, that one can run it either way. He can become popular and greatness will follow. Or she can become great and popularity will follow. Neither is true. The tiny bit of truth in that is that occasionally truly great people have also become well known among us. In a few cases, they have ended up with strong influence. The unfortunate conclusion some have drawn from that, though, is that any attention leads to great things, to worthwhile living. Conversely, it is feared that never to have risen above the masses in some distinct way is to have lived a life of no real worth or consequence. What has been the point of my being here if no one even takes notice of what I've done or cared about or hoped for? Even if I am a responsible, hardworking, loyal, devout, kind, generous, and all the rest, if it's taken for granted and uncelebrated, what's the point? Am I not something like that proverbial tree that they always talk about, falling in the middle of the woods but makes no sound because no one's there listening? One of my great loves in preaching illustrations over the years has been Charles Schulz's Peanuts cartoons. In this particular cartoon, Lucy is in her counseling booth under the sign that says, "Psychiatric help, 5 cents." Her patient is Charlie Brown in one of his crises of self-worth and inferiority. Frame after frame, she lectures him, saying, "All right, let's put it another way. Life is like a grocery cart. Each of us has a grocery cart, and our life is a supermarket. The world is filled with wonderful possibilities. So push your cart down the aisles, Charlie Brown. Push that cart. That cart is you. Push it right up to the checkout counter." But Charlie Brown, still mired in his low self-concept, says, "Which checkout counter? I think I have 8 items or less." And there you have it. In cartoon form, if one decides that life's grocery cart is of no particular note, it isn't too difficult to see how he might reach the conclusion that holding the record for prune eating is better than nothing. Some attempts are more conventional. Hypochondria, for example, can be an attempt to distinguish oneself by becoming a world-class sufferer. Strange religious practices are used by still others to make themselves stand out from the herd. Frequently, it's behind the drive for wealth or social prominence. Sadly enough, by the time a person finds out that notoriety is just that, notoriety, he's squandered much of the time and opportunities of his life. I found something the other day, something very moving, I thought, from, of all people, Sylvester Stallone, who talked about the way he has handled his life. Let me share it with you. He said, "If I were watching a home movie of my life, I would shake my head in despair and wonderment. It's been a comedy of errors." He went on to admit that he had become arrogant and petty and selfish and, worst of all, blind to everything truly important. He finishes by saying, "When you're living in the fast lane, you tend to overlook the basic components that give your life meaning. Relationships, for example. Putting someone else first. People who are drunk with ambition don't even focus on the needs of their family, their children. Now, in looking back, I know what is sacred. Stallone has spotted the problem, hasn't he? It's that making a priority of notoriety and popularity and public recognition. Take a person in the precise opposite direction from that which goes into creating a wise, noble, large-spirited human being. But why? Notoriety as a goal happens through self-promotion. It packages itself and it sells that self. Great human beings, on the other hand, come to be by spending themselves on the life and the lives around them. It's a major difference. Most notoriety is based on the belief that in some way the person is superior to most others and that he has triumphed over others. Much to the contrary, people of depth are those who understand and identify with the people with whom they share life. Fame or notoriety is one-dimensional. He's the number one running back. She's the best-selling rock star. She's this year's biggest box office draw. He's the wealthiest man. The fact is, though, that anyone, by focusing on himself narrowly enough, can probably become widely known for something. That's the one that ate the prunes. But does that have anything whatsoever to do with being a great human being? No, of course not. Usually it's the exact opposite. In applying all of one's imagination and energy and devotion and ingenuity into some narrow dimension of us, that qualities like empathy and selflessness and spirituality and even playfulness, they all atrophy. You see, noble people are whole people. They're multidimensional ones. Tragically, it often ends up one-dimensional for those who, to all appearances, have done very well. Doing well financially, socially, or in public recognition is done in the hope that it is bound to bring personal fulfillment and meaning. And then comes that horrible discovery that they really didn't exist apart from whatever their pre-retirement career or vocation was. Now with that gone, what remains is essentially an empty person. A chilling echo of that appeared not long ago. It was a takeoff on another bumper sticker, usually seen on the back of expensive sports cars. The one, you know, that says, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." The one I saw was the same start. It said, "The one who dies with the most toys is nonetheless dead." The point is that absolutely nothing has changed on this matter since the time that Jesus walked this earth. When he said things like, "He who tries to hold on to his life loses it, while he who is willing to give it away therein finds it." Or remember when Jesus said, "Don't be storing up earthly treasures that spoil and deteriorate. The things that you treasure need to be those things that are eternal." And finally, you don't have to worry about what can kill the body. Instead, worry about what destroys your very soul. You get the picture, don't you? The real questions then have absolutely nothing to do with whether anyone anywhere envies your talent or how many people know who you are or in which of life's competitions you've excelled or what accomplishments will dominate your obituary. The only questions that have to do with human worth, with personal depth, with anything close to true wisdom are still ones like, how much joy and hope have you or I brought to our human surroundings? How close have I been able to draw to the lives around me? How consciously, deeply, and intentionally am I connected to and loving of the world and time that God has given me? How in the whole array of possibilities available have I become a creator with God? What of me will continue to give and work and create even when I've jumped into my coffin and pulled the lid shut? Am I creating a presence or a spirit that keeps right on giving and blessing and nourishing? Those you see and others like them are the questions having to do with human greatness. They really are the only ones worth raising about any of us. True, this is a hard sell, particularly in our time. The conventional wisdom of our culture screams at us that in order to be okay, to be relevant, to have made any difference, you need to stand out as a person. Whether in name recognition, in some startling feat, by what you own, by how you look, or even as a walking curiosity, if nothing else. It's a cruel myth. For no matter what yours or my notoriety, there's always going to be someone who is poised to eat one more prune than you, or preach one more hour than I can, or steal our 15 minutes of fame in some other way. So don't get this notoriety versus great thing mixed up in your own mind or in the thinking of your children. All too easily, one loses everything important about his life when he does. Amen.